I'm Ainsley Earhart, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Thursday, September 13th, 2018. I'm Dave Anthony. President Trump's been under attack from the inside. Sources in the Bob Woodward book, anonymous in that op-ed piece, all detailing chaos in the White House. Eric Trump defends his father.
Maybe we need impulsive people. Hey, maybe we need direct people. Maybe we need people who aren't PC.
I'm Jessica Rosenthal. Apple unveils new products, but worries about the impact of possible tariffs on China. And they're not alone.
I'd say the business community in the United States is almost entirely united in thinking this is a very, very bad idea.
And I'm Tom Shalhoub. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
It's less than 2 months before the midterm elections, and some Democrats hope an anti-Trump strategy helps them take back control of Congress. And if that happens, Democrat Maxine Waters will be ready in the House.
There's a difference in how some of our leadership talk about how we should handle all of this. They say, Maxine, please don't say impeachment anymore. And when they say that, I say impeachment, impeachment, impeachment.
Congresswoman Waters also telling a group of Democrats over the weekend in California in a video posted by American Mirror, Mike Pence would be impeached next. This has people from within the Trump administration being quoted saying negative things about the president in Bob Woodward's new book and in the New York Times op-ed written by someone who's still anonymous, said to be a senior official claiming to be saving the country from an impulsive president, something Eric Trump bristles at. We sat down with the president's son, who's an executive vice president for the Trump Organization.
First, you had 99% of the media, Fox excluded, that completely got it wrong. You know, so you have all these, elitist people who went to great schools, who wrote for, months and months and years about how he could never win. I'll never forget the New York Times giving him a 1% chance of winning election morning, 1% chance of winning, and then all of a sudden you see their little silly meter, their little gas meter that keeps going up and up and up and up until he had 100% chance of winning. And, they all called it wrong. And, there's been a society that's been created almost by that media where, somebody can go write a sensational nonsense book. They can obviously go on CNN, because anybody who says anything bad about my father will be invited on CNN and MSNBC and most of the other stations. They can promote it and they can put a couple of shekels in their pocket.
But this is Bob Woodward. This is not just somebody who is trying to make a buck. Bob Woodward has written books about numerous presidents, of course, famous for helping bring down President Nixon with the Watergate reporting that he did.
Name a quantifiable measure right now that we have in our society that's not better off than it was 20 months ago. We've got the fastest growing economy in the history of our country. We have the lowest unemployment that we've ever had, 3.9%. We have the lowest African-American unemployment, the lowest Hispanic unemployment, the lowest female unemployment. Between 2001 and 2016, America lost 70,000 factories. That's right after Bill Clinton signed NAFTA. Right? 70,000 factories disappeared from our shores, went overseas. Factories are coming back. Manufacturing is coming back. Consumer confidence is an all-time high. The markets are breaking every record. 401ks are through the roof. I mean, where do you want me to stop? And I mean, I could go on and on. Let's
go into it. It's true, consumer confidence has hit around a 17, 18-year high in its recent gauge. It's true the stock market had hit a lot of records after your father took office, just by predictions it would tank. However, when you say it's the fastest growing economy we've ever had, that isn't really the case, because economic growth of the low 4% is what we just have had in the last quarter, and there's hope that that would continue. But even during, you have to be fair, even during the Obama administration, while he did have some very low growth in quarters, there were times that he got over 5% in economic growth and over 4% more than once.
Hey, we're 20 months into this thing. In all of fairness, we're 20 months into this thing. You think we're getting 4%, I don't actually think he had 5% quarters.
He did. He had a 5% quarter.
All right. I would go back and check that very carefully.
It was around 2013.
All right. He also had 10% unemployment, and he doubled the national deficit. He more than doubled the national deficit. He rose taxes, and they drove pretty much every company out of this country.
Now, Eric Trump asked us to go back and check that very carefully. So we did. And here are the numbers from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. There were four times during the Obama years when the economy grew more than 4% in a quarter. It happened first in 2009, But growth after that was meager, or the GDP declined. Then in the fall of 2011, growth was 4.7%. But less than a year after that, there was barely any growth, and then another negative quarter, followed in 2014 by a spring quarter where growth did hit 5.1%, followed by 4.9% that summer, and then it dropped off again. Now, former President Obama took issue with rosy Trump economy claims last week.
When the job numbers come out, monthly job numbers, and suddenly Republicans are saying it's a miracle. I had to kind of remind them, actually, those job numbers are the same as they were in 2015 and 2016.
In both of those years, there were more jobs created than in President Trump's first year. But the unemployment rate was either over or just under 5% then. It is under 4% now under President Trump.
It is absolutely insane. We overtaxed our companies. We overregulated our companies. We did everything we could to drive business out of our nation. And now you see all the manufacturing jobs coming back. You see factories where lights are turning back on. You know, and it's quite frankly why my father got elected. So the criticism that a Woodward would have is that he's brash. He's he's tough. He speaks his mind. Once in a while, he's not PC.
Impulsive is what others who've been quoted talk about him being impulsive. They talk about him having problems
with the truth. Hey, maybe we need impulsive people. Maybe we need direct people. Maybe we need people who aren't PC, because the other system wasn't working. Look at ISIS. I mean, you couldn't watch this channel. You couldn't watch Fox News without hearing about ISIS every single sentence 2 years ago, because it was the biggest story out there. It was the absolute biggest story out there.
Oh, yeah. They took over Iraq and Syria, and parts of it anyway.
For all intents and purposes, they absolutely dismantled ISIS, right? I mean, by every quantifiable metric, he's done an unbelievable job. I mean, look at prison reform. No one even wants to talk about that. One of the highest priorities in the administration right now, something that desperately needs to be done. Look at the opioid crisis, which no one wanted to touch, right? Which has been such a big focus of theirs. Look at what they've done in Israel and in the Middle East and, Jerusalem and everything else. I mean, he's 20 months into this process. He's done an absolutely unbelievable job. And then what's their message on the other point? I mean, that's the question I'd give you. The Democrats really have three messages right now that I can synthesize. One is, let's raise taxes, right? The second is, let's abolish ICE and let's have a full-on frontal attack on all law enforcement, some of the bravest, finest people out there. And their third message, and I joke about this all the time, but it's almost not a joke, let's eliminate plastic straws. I mean, that's their messaging.
A lot of people hate your father. It's a fact.
And a lot of people love
him. Of course. That's a fact. But a lot of people on the left, this is an anti-Trump election in their view.
Sure.
And they look at his tweets. They say that he's not civil. They say that he's nasty in his tweets, that he's divisive in the way he does things.
Because they have no platform of their own. They have no messaging. They have no leadership of their own.
Are there times when you look at one of your father's tweets and say, oh, I wish he didn't do that?
Are people different personality-wise? 100%. What I can say and what I say all the time is, I am so glad we have a fighter in this country. You know, how sick and tired were of old politicians were you, where it's, you know, they get out on stage and they say a lot of nice words and they sound really nice flowing together. It's almost poetry, but they don't mean anything and nothing ever comes from it, right? They don't quantify results. They go out there and, you know, again, they speak and, you know, it sounds beautiful and nothing gets accomplished, right? He's the exact opposite person. He goes out there. He doesn't use 12 teleprompters, right? He gets out there. He speaks from the heart. Hey, sometimes it's not PC, you know, and sometimes he's willing to fight. Sometimes he's willing to fight, quite frankly, when he shouldn't even fight. But you know, that's part of somebody's DNA. You're either a fighter or you're not. And this country desperately needed a fighter. There was no one fighting for this country. When you had $800 billion in trade deficit, when we were getting ripped off by China, when we were getting ripped off by Mexico, when we were losing our jobs, when we were losing our economy, you know, when every military plan for every fighter plane was being stolen, when the intellectual property of every company in this country was getting absolutely ripped off, the exact same products were being made in China despite us spending hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars in R&D. And there wasn't a single person doing a single thing about it. To me, that's embarrassing. And you know what? I'd much rather have somebody send out a little bit of a controversial tweet, maybe something that's a little bit pointed, and actually fight for our nation, than somebody who sends out tweets that, quite frankly, put you to sleep that do nothing to actually fight for our nation.
Tariffs, there's a concern, even among Republicans, even among his supporters who might be farmers, that the tariffs and the back-and-forth trade war with China and Europe and maybe Canada could, at least in the short term, hurt people that are his supporters. Is that a concern as you get into November?
Now, everybody talks about trade war. Who's winning? And I just ask you this, because who's winning this trade war? Our markets are
still in the middle of it, aren't we?
Yeah, our markets are at the highest they've ever been, right? And China is down 20% this year. They are the worst economic performing country in the world this year. By the way, once in a while, there might be short-term pain, right? I don't think anybody's ever, including my father, I don't think anybody's ever said that there might not be. You might have one company who's solely reliable on X, Y, and Z, and hey, you know, there might be pain for a month or 2 months. But again, America is doing the best it's ever done. The market's at our all-time highs, and China's down 20%, and they are scared out of their mind because we hold all the cards. It's just we've never had politicians that will play the correct hand.
The other day, you tweeted, hatred makes people blind to the facts. And then, of course, there were a lot of people who were retweeting it and putting their own things. Oh, isn't that rich with irony with all the 4,000 or whatever the number is of supposed lies your father's told, all the fact checkers out there. What do you make of all the fact checking of your father?
There's very little fact checking of it. You know, I mean, if you, I keep using it, maybe it's because I'm a business guy, maybe because I'm you know, that's the side of my brain that thinks about these, but I look at quantifiable things, not sound bites. And I've listed a lot of them already on the show, right? You know, everything about the economy, everything that he's done, ISIS, just everything, right? And there are quantifiable measures that show that every aspect of our government, at least the important aspects of the government that I think, you know, president should be single-handedly focused on, are leaps and bounds better than it was 2 years ago, 8 years ago, 16 years ago, in the last several administrations.
Do you think your father—
just about by every metric. And so, you know, it's very easy to come out and say, you know, somebody's a sexist, somebody's a racist, somebody's a this, somebody's that, right? They label they probably label you that way just because you work on this station, because you work at Fox, right?
These are very judgmental society. That's a given. But the question is, your father has this core group of supporters. How does he turn any of the people who have a negative view of him around?
I think he does it every day. I think when somebody opens up their 401k and sees it is up 35% over where it was, you know, I think they're turned around. I think when, you know, people get the first wage increase this year that they've had in the last 2017, 2018, but that they've had in the last 16 years, you know this number better than anybody. Wages have not gone up in this country in 16 years. In 16 years. All of a sudden, we have wage growth again. I think people realize that. I think when my father puts through the largest tax cut in the history of this country, which equals $2,500 roughly, you know, on average.
Which fact checkers, again, say that's not actually the largest tax increase in history.
I think it's the largest tax increase in history. And then it spurs 4.2% GDP growth, one of the fastest in history, which is predicted by many analysts right now to be approaching 4.7-4.8% at the end. The country is doing great, and I think that overshadows a crazy lunatic going on TV saying we must impeach. You know, you go into America, you go into Central America, and people look at this stuff and they shake their heads at it. And I can tell you the sentiment there is very different than the sentiment you see when you turn on the TV oftentimes. In the morning, there is a huge disconnect between the people reporting out of these, you know, beautiful ivory towers and, you know, Americans who go to work every single day and want to provide for families and want to have a great job and want to take a vacation once a year and want to live, you know, their own version of the American dream.
Eric Trump, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, it's great to be on.
This is Tom Shalhoub with your Fox News commentary. Coming up.
It's that time of year again, a couple of weeks before autumn, which means Apple unveils its new products. This one yesterday marked more incremental advancements than a big blockbuster announcement, but a couple of key topics were noticeably absent from the discussion. One, last month, Apple became the first trillion-dollar publicly traded company. And two, just a few days ago, President Trump again repeated his call for Apple to manufacture here in the U.S. And after the president's newest threat to impose tariffs on more than $200 billion worth of Chinese imports, Apple released a list of products like AirPods, Apple Watches, and printed circuit boards, which would rise in price if those tariffs went into effect. At their event, Apple executives like CEO Tim Cook remained product-focused, talking about things like the Series 4 Apple Watch, which can conduct FDA-approved echocardiograms.
Newly designed and re-engineered to help you stay even more active, healthy, and connected. It is the most capable Apple Watch yet.
And of course, the main attraction at all of these events, new iPhones, including a $749 version of the iPhone X.
The iPhone XR is kind of the meat of this.
Fox Business Network's Hillary Vaughn was at the Apple event in Cupertino, California.
Tim Cook stood up there and said his plan is to get iPhones into more hands, and the way they're going to do that is not by selling the most expensive iPhone ever, it's by lowering the cost of their other devices. So they came out with this iPhone XR that is basically like the cheap version of an iPhone X. It has the same features, not as much storage, but it does the job. And they're hoping that they can use that to boost the amount of volume of their sales. But then they also rolled out the iPhone XS Max. That's kind of the iPhone X Plus version that they have. It is the biggest display ever, but then on the other hand, it's the most expensive.
They did not mention during the event that just a couple of days ago, President Trump had urged Apple to start making products in the United States rather than China, right?
No, and that's what's interesting. I think everyone was waiting to see if Tim Cook would publicly rebuke this tariff fight between the president and China, because one thing that he singled out in a letter that he released was that Apple Watches and their AirPods, the Apple wireless headphones, are going to be impacted by these tariffs. And he said they have no choice but to hike prices in response.
Was there any talk sort of behind the scenes about the president's request that Apple, you know, start making products in the United States? Like, I know that Tim Cook and Phil Schiller and those on stage didn't mention it, but has that been sort of being talked about, I guess, in Cupertino?
No, there hasn't really been any murmurs of that at all. Really, the focus has been on the products and kind of taking a look and seeing what the company is prioritizing, what direction they're moving towards. And again, the biggest takeaway here was that there obviously is an understanding while they continue to outdo themselves with the most expensive iPhone for 2 years in a row, they're also accommodating people who have a lower price point because they don't want to lose out on the volume of sales where they may be making as much or more revenue than they have from iPhones. They still want to make sure they keep that volume steady or continue to build it up by generating a stronger user base, getting more people than ever using an iPhone, you know, convincing some people to switch over that may have not switched over yet.
So while the event went on without any mention of tariffs or China or manufacturing, it is on the minds of many in the tech sector, and the concern is growing about President Trump's possible tariffs, which could hit billions of dollars worth of Chinese imports, on top of the initial $50 billion already imposed. The president has said before things between the two countries just are not fair.
We want reciprocal mirror. Some people call it a mirror tariff. Or a mirror tax. Just use the word reciprocal. If they charge us, we charge them the same thing. That's the way it's got to be. That's not the way it is. For many, many years, for many decades, it has not been that way.
But critics see it very differently. Gary Shapiro is the CEO of the Consumer Technology Association.
The impact of another $200 billion worth of products having a 25% tariff is huge. And it's, in the case of Apple and some other companies, it's nonsensical. Some of those products that Apple, let's say smartphones, a new smartphone, a lot of those chips in there are made in the United States, exported to China, inserted with other components from around the world, and they come back to the U.S. And if there's a 25% tariff on that product, that means the American consumer is going to pay over 20% more for that product. And that's a tax by any definition. And it's also a tax on U.S. exports, not even to mention all the retaliation that's going on against our farmers and against our manufacturers of other products. And that's why we think this has a huge impact.
I think you guys warned that, you know, if there are tariffs on like printed circuit boards and connected devices, prices could go up by 6%.
Absolutely. If they have just, for example, printed circuit board assemblies, which is a big part of data centers, which we're worldwide competitive in, that will cost our economy over $2 billion annually. And that means Americans will pay between $1 and $3 billion more for their connected products. And that means about a 22% price tax on all American consumers who rely on these products to stay connected with each other. And this is not a rich versus poor thing. Most Americans rely on their phones and connected products today. And that's pretty significant tax on the American public.
I understand that you are under the impression you have some legal recourse here if this does become a reality.
Well, the question is, has Congress given to President Trump the authority to unilaterally declare a huge trade war? Can President Trump on his own declare that all imports have any level of tax that he wants? And that's essentially what it appears that he's doing here. And that there's a lot of reasons why that doesn't make good legal sense. So we have not made any decision whether we have to resort to legal recourse, but certainly the option is there on the table because there's no precedent for the president doing it.
And the president did say in the past few days, right, to Apple, look, I think it was in a tweet, he said, and I'm paraphrasing, come back to the United States, manufacture here instead of over there. That's your solution. What would that do? I mean, in my experience, or I'm under the impression that that would not make things cheaper. In fact, that would probably make products even more expensive than say, implementing tariffs.
It would make it hugely expensive. And the best analogy I can come up with is pretty much that's a strategy Brazil has had for a number of years. They've put huge tariffs on all imports. And what that's led to is a devastating effect on the Brazilian economy. It's led to their consumers being be deprived of basic technologies such as computers and telephones. And it's led to Brazilian consumers coming to the United States with empty suitcases and leaving with them full. It's helped our economy tremendously in our retail sales tax and our retailers and our product makers, but it has done almost nothing for the Brazilian economy, and it set them back quite a bit. And when we all thought Brazil would be one of the big hot economies of the world, it hasn't materialized that way.
What's the solution then? Because obviously we have a president who feels like the United States has become the world's piggy bank and that things are not fair, and the response to him can't simply be, look, leave it the way it is. Don't touch it. Because he clearly feels like the United States is being wronged. So what's sort of the middle ground?
I think we have a legitimate claim on the basis of intellectual property and other practices by the Chinese. And there's a number of things we could do. We could pursue it with the World Trade Organization, which is the body that we helped create, that we've agreed upon, and we win most of our cases there. We can also look at other things we could go to reciprocity with China. If they're doing things to us, we could do it to them. If they require that you have to have a joint venture partner in China, we could require that no Chinese could do business here without a joint venture partner or buy property or do other things similar to what they do to us. I think everyone would consider that fair. But to unilaterally impose tariffs on Chinese products such quickly and dramatically affects U.S. consumers, U.S. industries, and industries that the Chinese are retaliate against that we have competitive advantage on, it will certainly set our manufacturers back and our economy back.
The president's proposing another $200 billion and then what, another $267 billion? Or are those two, am I conflating those two numbers and those are really the same?
No, you have it precisely right according to what he says, but sometimes he says up to $200 billion. And it's not the tariffs, it's $200 billion worth of imports per year of getting up to a 25% tariff on it. So until they finally act, and there's some of us that believe they really won't act till after the election because it would not be helpful to the Republican cause. Some people believe they could act as early as tomorrow. The truth is they don't know, and I don't think anyone knows, including the United States Trade Representative. I think, you know, if the president is on his desk and he focuses on it, and he may do it, and if he doesn't, it may not happen. But it's certainly, there's a lot of other things going on in the country. There's a fourth quarter selling season. There's the stock market, which is getting some real jitters over this. And I don't think that the president wants to go into the election with a $200 billion tariffs hanging over, with all the confusion and uncertainty in the fourth quarter selling season, the impact on the stock market. I just don't see that, because he's definitely focused politically on an unfriendly House, and this would not help the political situation with Republicans, especially from the farm states that are relying upon exports.
Gary, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's a brand new podcast based on the brand new book from Fox News political editor Chris Steigerwalt, Every Man a King.
A short, colorful history of American populists. It's funny, informative, and useful, I think.
Find it now on Apple Podcasts.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tom Shalhoub.
What's on your mind?
I'm writing this commentary on a lined, legal-sized pad of paper. Can you hear my pencil? Yeah, it's kind of old-fashioned, right? My dad used to have these legal pads. He had a whole stack of them on his desk, and he was always writing longhand on them in pencil, letters, essays, poetry. And I thought to myself, when I'm older, I'll probably do that too. Well, lately, like most people, I've been doing everything on my devices, including writing these commentaries I do for the podcast. I dictate them into my phone, into the voice recognition software app, then I print it out, and I read it from the email that I send to myself. It's probably an unnecessarily complex process. I don't know if it saves me much time, and I'm not sure it's more enjoyable than actually putting pencil to paper. This weekend, I was on the beach, and I read a book, an actual book, written on paper, you know, with a hardcover. It was called Zero Hour for Generation X by Matthew Hennessy. Basically, he says that this generation, Generation X, is the last one to be raised free of our dependence on these devices and the internet. And it takes all our attention, steals our focus, and causes us to lose touch with the real world. I totally agree with him. So here's my latest project. If I can do it analog, I will. If I can write with a pencil on paper, I'll do it. If I can speak to someone face to face, I'm going to do that too. I'm not going to go into a cabin in the woods and retreat from society. Do you hear my paper rustling here? I'm just going to resist doing everything while I stare into a tiny device. Maybe you can give it a try, too. Let me know how it works out. Don't email me. Just tell me face-to-face next time you run into me.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.